Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Here we are. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's Thursday, August 7th, wow, 2025, and we are gathering for our World Peace Circle meditation time that we have on the first Thursday of every month. And thank you for joining us. I usually put the word out on this a little bit more than I did this time, so it may be a smaller group. We'll see, but it's quality, not quantity, so we'll just go ahead and let some more people in here. Davi is joining us from England. Keith, I think you're here from far away, I think Australia. And so thanks for joining us. And so we'd like to go ahead. You know pretty much the pattern that we follow here. I'm going to start out. We're at home still, and we'll have our meditation here in the beginning. And then I was thinking of working a little bit with and sharing an article or an essay or writing that I just did on an old song that we all know from the time we were little kids. A nursery rhyme. It's row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. I think it's got a lot of wisdom. So I think we'll go ahead and get started. If people come in, Lisa, thank you for being our co-host and letting people in. If I have my eyes closed here, and we're delighted to just take an hour or so and connect with the spiritual dimension of our movement to liberate animals. That's really the heart and soul of this, the spiritual dimension of animal liberation. And really, they're not separate. Spirituality and veganism are really two sides of the same coin. And the more we go into one, the more we should be exploring the other, I would say. So let's go ahead and turn our attention within here. So we become aware now of our breathing. And we give thanks for this precious time we have now together to enter into a time of meditation, of turning our attention inward to the infinite source of what we are, the eternal dimension of consciousness, our true nature. And we feel into situation on the earth right now. It seems so unprecedented with all of the technological changes, political and economic changes. And we go more deeply into our heart, the very heart of being, where we dwell always in this present moment. Then we give thanks for the great spiritual teachers who have graced our earth, who have graced our consciousness, who have blessed us in this incarnation. We can think of them, if we'd like, the particular ones whose writings, whose presence, whose teachings have been a benefit to us, whose example has been a light in our world. We can give thanks for their presence. And we think also of our parents. We give thanks for their great gift of helping to bring us into this world, for their guidance and for their love, an example. And we just open up now to all of the teachers in our life, even people who have been challenging for us, have been our teachers perhaps. And we give thanks for all of the teachings of all the wisdom traditions that open our hearts and minds to the truth of the infinite interconnectedness of all life and the delusion of separateness, that what we are is far more than this physical body. We give thanks for the light that shines at the heart of the universe and shines also in every cell of our being, shining in our heart and in all of our aspirations. Assurance that we are always living in unity, in the infinite love that is the source of all life. And now we especially connect with and send our love to this beautiful earth and all the living beings here, the animals of the sky, the birds, all of the living beings of the waters, the marine creatures, and all of the living beings abiding in the land, under the land, on the land, knowing that we are part of a sacred celebration of immense, infinite intelligence, creativity, and joy. May all beings be happy and free of human interference. They realize their true nature, awaken out of the delusion of suffering. So we give thanks for all these beautiful expressions of divine life who can teach us so much. Now finally we enter into our practice of the four infinite, immeasurable states of consciousness. The four viharas, with every inhalation engendering in our heart feeling of loving kindness and benevolence, filling our heart with this feeling of kindness and benevolence for all living beings, and with every exhalation, radiating love in all directions to all living beings, excluding no one from our love, sending our love also to ourselves, the beautiful and unique being that we are. Abiding in our true home of love, breathing and radiating loving kindness to all beings. With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion. Great compassion that yearns that all beings be free from suffering, and the yearning to act and to do whatever we can to help relieve the suffering of others. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of compassion to flow forth from our heart in ever-expanding spheres of light. We see the whole earth now encircled by compassion. Abiding in our true home of compassion, now with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the wonderful bubbling spring of joy that's always abiding and flowing forth from our true nature. And with every exhalation, we allow this great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world to radiate from our heart, filling the whole world with the truth of infinite joy, breathing and radiating joy, abiding in our true home of joy. Every inhalation, finally, now we engender in our heart the great peace, that comes naturally when we feel a sense of love, compassion, and joy. We are at peace. We are in harmony with our purpose on this earth. So with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of peace to radiate from our heart and from the very essence of what we are into the world around us, breathing and radiating peace and harmony. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace, in the truth that beyond all the appearances, there is the great peace, the divine love and reality that is eternal and indestructible. Abiding in our true home now of the four Viharas, abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy, abiding in peace, breathing and radiating love, breathing and radiating compassion, radiating peace. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth and to be part of the awakening of human consciousness during these critical times on planet Earth. We give thanks for each other, for all of our brothers and sisters in the movement to liberate animals and human beings. May we all continue every day to grow in wisdom and compassion, to be a light in the world, for the benefit of all living beings of the past, present, and future, and to help build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for everyone, a world that reflects the truth and shines in the heart of all living beings that there is one life living through us all. Through the power and presence of the Infinite Spirit of Truth and Love indwelling, we give thanks, knowing this is so and so it is. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate your presence and your joining together in our meditation time. All right, so this, as we know, this is our time together. We don't usually go too much into the briars of political issues, although we can get a little bit in there, but mainly we like to focus on the spiritual dimension on the first Thursday, and of course on the third Thursday, anything's possible. So it's just a delight to be here. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm thinking that I might go ahead and share this recent writing that I just did about the boats returning home. And I thought, it's not that long. I could maybe just read it. It's kind of interesting. I think it's an interesting story. You know, this seemingly very innocent little childhood nursery rhyme song that we all know, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. I think that has such an important teaching. And so I was thinking I'd go ahead and just read what I wrote, and then if you have any thoughts about this, we can have a discussion. But also, if anybody has any particular pressing questions before that, let me know, because we can, I'm happy to address those, if there are any. It looks like, you can always, go down to the bottom and click on the React, and you can raise your hand or just unmute yourself and say something. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and just jump in here. Okay, so here we go. So this is it. So I just said the little the words to the nursery rhyme. So this is the writing that I did. This whimsical and lighthearted nursery rhyme points to profound understandings that can help liberate us from misunderstandings and deceptions that tend to cause conflict and confusion in our lives. There is a remarkable sense of harmony, joy, freedom, and transcendent awareness hinted at in these two lines. Looking deeply into the disarmingly simple images in this 19th century minstrel song can take us on an adventure into ancient spiritual wisdom that is more relevant today than ever. The archetypes are universal. The boat is our vehicle, our body, mind, and life. And the stream represents the great mystery that supports us all, the primordial and eternal unfoldment of being that is ever flowing from the source and ever returning to the great ocean to which all streams and all of us boats eventually return. We can each endeavor to harmonize our thoughts and actions with this stream, which symbolizes the inherent, ineffable way of truth that goes by many names. In the ancient Chinese traditions, it is the Tao, and is referred to in Buddhist teachings as Dharmata, the underlying truth of being, and as the abiding presence of the divine principle, the Holy Spirit, in Christian terms, that reveals the hidden timeless beauty within nature and that pervades and makes possible the forms, circumstances, and opportunities in the world around us. We are now, all of us on this earth, row, row, rowing our boats every moment of our lives on this eternal life-giving stream, knowingly or not. And how are we called to do so? First, we are called to do so gently, which evokes a sense of tenderness and kindness towards others on the journey, and also a feeling of mindful awareness and appreciation for the journey we are on, and for the stream that carries us and propels us along. We are going down the stream and with the current, supported by the benevolent power that is continually helping us and bringing us onward on our journey. Secondly, we are called to do so merrily, four times merrily, as if there is no end to the joy, happiness, and freedom of this rowing along, savoring every moment and realizing the deeper truth that our life is a dream. What does this actually mean, and what is the significance of this idea that our life is a dream? When we are in the midst of a dream, we are typically convinced of its reality, and we see, hear, feel, and experience this dream reality in as convincing a manner as when we are experiencing our daily waking life. But upon awakening in the morning, we clearly see that it was just a dream, and that it took place entirely within our consciousness, and was also a product of our consciousness. We see that the dream was an ephemeral and fleeting and somewhat illusory experience that we mistakenly took to have a reality of its own. Similarly, when we carefully examine the sense impressions that we receive from the apparently outer world, everything we see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and conceive, we realize that it is all the product of neuronal impulses continually arriving over electrical neural pathways from our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and tactile receptors, which our consciousness receives, interprets, and from which it fabricates the ongoing experience that we take to be a self-existing reality that is outside us. Additionally, much of our understanding of the world in this electronic era comes from media inputs that have been produced by outside forces with various agendas, which are additionally filtered through our sense receptors and consciousness. Just as our night dream seems self-existingly real until we awaken, so too does our outer world seem self-existingly real and separate from us, as both a concrete, tactile reality and as an abstract one produced by media images. This sense of separateness gives rise to the twin drives of fear and aversion on one hand, and craving and attachment on the other. to protect and affirm ourselves in our underlying sense of separateness from the world and our vulnerability, we are continually, like everyone else, seeking to acquire some things and conditions and to repel others. When all of us are doing this, a world imbued with conflict, competition, and instrumentalization is unavoidable, because we are naturally propelled to use and exploit each other as instruments for our own ends. Animals, ecosystems, future generations, children, and the less privileged are especially susceptible to harm, but none of us can escape the suffering that this delusion propagates. Our cultural indoctrination from birth conditions us to assume that we are an essentially separate self-object that was born and will die, a mere material body existing temporarily in a vast material universe that exploded into being with a big bang and that is essentially meaningless. This pervasive cultural narrative that reduces everything to matter works well to imprison us within an atmosphere of anxiety and vulnerability that makes us easy to manipulate, control, and exploit. The underlying materialism is a direct product of our 10,000-year practice of herderism, routinely enslaving animals for food and reducing these living beings, these living individual beings, into mere material objects that we buy and sell by the pound, by the millions every day. As discussed in our recent book, Food for Freedom, the torrent of physical, sexual, and psychological violence that our core cultural practice, eating, inflicts on cows, pigs, chickens, fishes, and other animals, boomerangs relentlessly into all of our affairs, deluding us into the materialism, fearful domination of nature, and sense of separateness that confines our awareness in shallow and self-oriented distractedness. Inflicting an ongoing nightmare on animals, we forget our true nature as manifestations of infinite, eternal benevolent consciousness, and inevitably project the same nightmare that we force onto animals into our human world as well. As we sow, we reap. Our suffering is ultimately self-inflicted and is also a gift in that it can help to propel us to question our actions and motives and to make an effort to free ourselves from the cultural narratives of materialism and domination that wound us all from infancy. With effort, we begin to discover that our life is an outpicturing of our consciousness, as is a dream, and that with practice, we can learn to quiet our mind and discover that the material human self with which we have been conditioned to identify is, in many ways, a deceptive mask that conceals a vast, beautiful, loving, creative, and witnessing presence, which is our true nature. Through meditative inquiry, we can discover the joy that is an ever-bubbling spring at the core of our being and which needs no reasons or causes in the outer world. By taking time to practice inner listening and quieting our mind and becoming more receptive to the eternal spiritual truth streaming into our awareness, we naturally find ourselves becoming more sensitive to our thoughts and actions and to how our actions affect others. We are drawn to a way of eating and living that liberates animals, nature, and others as much as possible from harm and abuse, and we increasingly delight in communing with the forces and beings that are all around us as wildlife and as the beauty of the earthly realm, a manifestation of the eternal presence that lives in us and as us. In many ways, this earthly realm can be seen as a school or training gym that we attend in order to learn, grow, and build up our spiritual, mental, and moral muscles. It is a challenging school indeed, and yet we would be disappointed in going to a gym if there were only little 5 and 10 pound weights there. We need heavier weights to successfully build our muscles, and our earth school provides plenty of very heavy weights for us to help strengthen our capacities to live authentically and with kindness and respect for others and to penetrate the many deceptions all around us and to discover the joy and freedom that abide as the inherent truth of our being. The pioneering mystic poet Walt Whitman seems to understand well the value of weights we carry here, of the weights we carry here on earth, which he celebrates in Song of the Open Road. Quote, "Still here I carry my old delicious burdens. I carry them, men and women, I carry them with me wherever I go. I swear it is impossible for me to get rid of them. I am filled with them, and I will fill them in return. From a spiritual perspective, the challenges and burdens of this earthly life, of this earthly realm, are delicious and nourishing. And although much of what appears here seems outside of our ability to control, we always do have the magnificent and essential power to control our responses to the appearances. With regular practice of inner listening and cultivating benevolence and an awareness of our thoughts and their arising, we can connect with our inner guidance system. This is our spiritual intuition that helps us to discern the seeming from the real and to discover how virtually all of our beliefs and certainties are culturally conditioned and have been implanted into our minds, and how they imprison us in a realm of delusion that causes us to abuse others in various ways, and also to be easily deceived and exploited. We realize the importance of questioning everything. All the cultural narratives about history, food, money, success, health, sexuality, happiness, freedom, life, and death that create the paradigm filters through which we view and live our lives. We come to understand that we have been fooled about the nature of reality, and that even the separate self with which we instinctively identify, the one with our name that looks back at us from the mirror, is not the true self, but is in many ways an imposter. We realize that trying to improve the world is similar to trying to improve our dreams. The only way to improve the world is to improve our consciousness. In dreaming, for instance, there is a somewhat rare phenomenon known as lucid dreaming. Normally, when we dream, events happen to us, as in daily life, and we seem to have no control and can be terrified by dream monsters and exhilarated by experiences of dream flying, for example. When we become lucid in a dream, however, we consciously realize that we are dreaming and that the monster isn't arising in our own consciousness, as is the experience of flying. And suddenly, new possibilities of freedom and empowerment dawn within us as we realize that we are creating and projecting everything in our dream, and we are no longer a victim, but can actually change the dream reality at will, opening new vistas of learning and discovering to us. In the same way, we can gradually become lucid in this waking dream and realize our essential unity with the stream and with all living beings in the field of our awareness. And from this foundation, anxiety dissipates, and we are no longer a vulnerable victim, but a co-creative protagonist. Our life and our advocacy are now rooted in loving kindness for all apparent others, and in the realization that the world arises within and mirrors our consciousness. The more that wisdom and truth are living within our consciousness, the more joy, freedom, and compassion we manifest in our world, and the more our life naturally becomes part of the solution to the problems here. We increasingly realize the underlying paradox that to our conditioned human sense, there is vast suffering that seems excruciatingly real, and that as our consciousness expands into higher vibratory dimensions, we can glimpse suffering's transient unreality and savor the eternal harmony permeating and underlying transitory appearances. Okay, this is the last paragraph. Most importantly, through this inner work to raise and maintain the vibratory level of our awareness above the low levels of fear, anger, righteous judgment, and squabbling that are continually enforced by established media, education, and government institutions, we disrupt the agenda that keeps us divided and that facilitates the exploitation of the many by the few. With practice, we develop the capability to allow the eternal stream to propel the little rowboat of this short and precious incarnation, just one of many, as we row gently and merrily on our homeward bound journey, lifting our weights and carrying our old delicious burdens. We are always supported, and we make our contribution by allowing the light to shine through our unique life to our fellow voyagers, all of us rowing our way through this floating earthly realm. That's it. So, thank you. I don't know if it was felt overly long. I got it all just on these four pages here, but I was in the middle of the night. I woke up from a dream, and I just had this row your boat gently down the stream in my head, in my mind, and I thought, wow, I want to write about that, and so I did. So I've been working on that for the last couple of days in the morning after meditation. And to me, it kind of ties together a lot of thoughts that I've been having about veganism and about our lives and what is reality and what is freedom and how do we respond to the suffering in the world in a way that's actually effective. And because I think our whole society struggles with that idea. How do we actually make a positive difference in the world and actually help others? And I think part of it has to really all of it, I think, actually, ultimately has to do with realizing our unity with other expressions of life and acting from that understanding. So that's why I think the inner work is so important. But please raise your hand if you'd like, or just tell me what you think. If you have any questions or thoughts or comments about some of the ideas in there that were interesting or you didn't like or whatever, because it hasn't gone out anywhere. I mean, it's never seen the light of day until this moment. I probably will post it somewhere on my website and put it out so people can read it. But I thought I'd just share it here, since I just finished it today, actually, this morning. I kind of told Madeline, okay, it's all done. I told Madeline I'd read it to her, and now she just was sitting here, and so she heard it too. So, yeah, any thoughts anyone have? Or you're just at a loss for words. You're just overwhelmed by the profundity of the whole thing. You know. Yes, Gino.
It was a lot to take in.
Yeah, I know. It was a lot. Yeah, you're right.
And I think that if I had it here in front of me, I would probably read it again, parse through it more carefully. One thing I want to say is that I think it's incredible and fated that you would have a dream, wake up, think of this rhyme, and then there you go. This huge piece. I don't know. It's incredible. I admire that greatly. One of the things, of course, we've talked about this many times, is doing the inner work. And I mention that myself every time we have a meeting. It's needed more than anything in order for us to make this work, in order for us to show respect to people and have them show it back to us, for them to take it in. You know, when we're giving them our point of view on animals, for example, Anonymous or the Voiceless and a couple of other approaches are doing a really good job with that in terms of interacting with people in a respectful way, in a way kind of picking their brains and making them say things that they normally wouldn't,
right.
But saying it in a respectful way. And in the end, even if they don't fully agree, some kind of shift has started. And we need to do that with everything, if we possibly can. We need to love each other. Simple as that. You know, I mean, if it's difficult, I mean, I had, you know, I was challenged this week, and I had to leave a group. And, I won't paint the whole scene, but if I did, you would say, yeah, I see what you mean. But I still see all their pluses. Many, many pluses,
yeah.
But I cannot be a part of it if they do this one thing about meat and animals and meat. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But surely one-on-one or something with them, yeah, I mean, it's great. The Reverend is a wonderful guy. You know, I see the pluses. So if we don't just write somebody and a group off 100%, they're no good, they're terrible because they don't agree with me, not right. Anyway, just such a few thoughts.
Thank you, Gino. Yeah, there's so many things that we agree on, but then we find a few things that we don't agree on that are like maybe deal breakers or something. I know what you mean. And it seems too bad because there's underlying agreement on other things that seem very important also. And so we get divided in more and more in these little silos of who we can finally find someone that really agrees with us on every little thing. It's like nobody. So the whole idea, I think, is to that's why I like this. You know, it's interesting. I looked it up on the internet. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. No one knows where it came from, but it came out of 19th century minstrel, activity in the United States, where there were these wandering minstrels that would go from town to town and city to city and sing songs. And it came out of there, and it's sort of based on an old nursery rhyme, maybe, but we don't know. And it had different melodies over the years until this melody was established, I think, in the late 1800s. And it's so simple, but when there's something about it that just penetrates through everything, I think. It's just sort of shocking to think, as a little kid, you learn that. That basic idea of row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. I mean, that's really subversive, you know, to the whole prison system that in many ways we're indoctrinated into. And if we really could see what it's saying and actually live by that, that's kind of what occurred to me, you know, at night when I thought about it a little bit. What you're saying, I think, is that basic thing, that just to love each other and to see that our consciousness is really primarily, when you say life is a dream, it's an arising in our consciousness. So if the underlying teaching in our society is, I'll be happy if the other people change. You know, I'll be happy when they're the way I like them to be. And this is saying life is a dream. And I've been studying lately lucid dreaming, because it's very interesting. You know, like in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, it's called dream yoga. But the whole idea is that you can really practice this and develop the capacity to wake up in your dream and realize it's a dream, and that has a tremendous benefit to daily life, because instead of reacting, like in the dreams, if someone comes and it's a nefarious character, and then I say, wait a minute, I'm dreaming, and give them a hug, because it's your dream. This is my dream. You know, I'm not at the mercy of what, you know, how you are. We realize, I think, that it's very similar. We have much more power in our world than we realize. But like in a dream, we think, oh, I'm at the mercy of whatever happens. And I wanted to kind of get that across, too. So thanks for sharing that so much. Susan, did you want to say something? You have your hand up there, too. So,
I think the section, I mean, I'm really glad you did, because I really like that rhyme. And I really am. It is intriguing about the fact that they're actually saying that life is but a dream. So I could understand why you'd want to explore that, because it's so. Can you hear me?
Perfectly. Perfectly.
Okay, yeah. Because it's so Buddhist in a way, that life is but a dream, or it's spiritual, of course. But anyway, and I feel like I missed something in the section where you made the transition from one topic to another, but it just also made me think about, you know, how important it is living in the moment and appreciating and loving loving who and what we're with at the moment. And I just want to say, like, I'm happy, like, lately, like, when I've become more of a person who hugs my friends when I see them, which, you know, actually, when I first got to Hawaii, I met this gal at the Aikido studio, and she came over and gave me a big hug, and I was like bowled over at that kind of beauty and warmth. And now, you know, I don't know, it's more Hawaii, but now I am hugging my friends when I see them. You know, it may take me a few seconds, and then I hug them. And, you know, it's like you have to bring this relationship to life, to say, I am so glad to see you. So anyway, so that's one thing. It's not exactly the topic of life is but a dream, but it's the topic of how we have to live in the moment and appreciate what we have.
Right, right. Show love to others. Yeah, I think that's really important nowadays. And, we had a we met a really neat guy at Hippocrates Health Institute from Sweden. His name is Andreas, and he said something to us. He said, "Madeline, what was it exactly? The how long about the hug?"
Oops.
10 seconds.
10 seconds.
10 second hug.
He said every woman needs to have a hug for 10 seconds every day, and you know, a good 10 seconds. And so I thought, well, that's kind of neat. So we always have a nice long hug in the morning, Madeline and I, because I want to make sure she gets her 10-second hug. And I think it's true. You know, I mean, I can't say it's necessarily true. I mean, there's a lot of cultures that never hug. But there's something, I think, about, you know, kind of a heart-to-heart connection that can be really helpful. And that was one of the things that really bothered the heck out of me during COVID, was this sort of government telling us, don't touch each other, don't get close to each other, don't, you know, stay apart. I mean, that's a brutal attack on just the fundamental human yearning and need, really, in a positive way, for nurturing and connecting and communing and loving kindness and expressing that. And so, you know, oh, afraid of you have germs, you're going to make me sick. I mean, you know, you're, instead of being an ally, you're a threat, right? I mean, this is so, to me, it's incredibly insidious that happened, and those people should all be held to account for causing so much death and destruction in our society. So hopefully we are starting to awaken up out of what happened. But I think that's an important point. The other thing I want to emphasize is sort of related but a little different, is that there is, I think, a deep questioning when people hear that idea, life is but a dream. There's a certain part of us, I think, especially in the West, where we say, no, that's not true. Life is real. Suffering is real. And I think there's a part of us that feels like we shouldn't ever say that, because that means we're sort of discounting the suffering of animals, for example. If I say, well, it's just a dream, you know, the cows and pigs and chickens, it doesn't matter. I can eat my steak and eat my lobster and have my cheese, because it's all a dream anyway. It doesn't matter. You know, they're just dream. They're just in my dream, right? So no big, no problems, no suffering actually happening. And so that sort of opens up the door to this, what I call the enlightenment delusion, which is that somehow this dreamlike, you know, that's just in our consciousness, that somehow gives us license to harm others, like in some way, or to not worry about the harm we're inflicting on them. So I really want to emphasize that's a huge misunderstanding, that's a terrible, well, I mean, there's a lot of karma involved when that happens. If we misuse that understanding that way, and we cause suffering to others and minimize the suffering that we're causing others, it's fine to minimize the suffering that I'm experiencing, right? I mean, if I'm really being harmed by someone else, the more I can be forgiving and take it on and respond in a way where it doesn't pull me down, I can stay at a high level, that's great. But for me to do that to others, to harm them and say, well, you know, it's no big deal, right? I mean, that's demonic. That's borders on sadistic, really, I think. We have to be very careful of that. And yet I see it a lot, quite a bit, actually, in meditation centers and church, in new, sort of new age kind of philosophy. There's sort of this underlying idea that we're enlightened now, so we can eat whatever we want and it's all okay, and so forth. So life is a dream, but it has consequences, and suffering is real. I mean, when we're in the middle of it, it's real. I mean, pain is really pain. And but the underlying idea is that we can purify our consciousness and go to a higher level where it doesn't have the fish hooks that grab into us the way it does when we're at a lower level. And it's fascinating to, of course, read biographies of enlightened yogis and spiritual teachers and saints and sages who reach that ability. And there's a lot of them. I mean, it's amazing what people have gone through over the years and been able to not be, in a sense, harmed by it. I think ultimately we're not harmed, And that's one of the things I remember telling this friend of mine. He was a kind of a new animal rights activist. We were at one of the animal rights conferences in Washington, D.C. I went every year. And we were talking about the slaughterhouses and the suffering of the cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys in the slaughterhouses. And he was trying to figure it out, like, why, what can we do to stop this and so forth. And I said to him, it's true. I mean, these animals are in extreme terror and pain, and then they're hung upside down, and they're stabbed, all this. I said, but then, then they leave their body, right? Then they're gone. Then it's over. And at that point, it never even happened. Right? I mean, I think that's how it is. I mean, I know that's how it is for me. If I have a really terrible, I never had a toothache, but if I ever had a terrible toothache, if I have a really terrible pain, it's really real. But then like a few weeks later, it's like I think back on it. Yeah, that was, but it's over. And so I don't know but we shouldn't use that thought to think, well, okay, then just let them get hung up and killed. No. So there's always this, that's the tension. There's always a tension between non-dual spiritual teaching and the dual spiritual teaching. And they never agree. And they're both right. That's basically it. They're both right. All right. So any other thoughts or questions anyone has? I think how are we doing? We have a couple more minutes if we'd like. Otherwise, we can end a little bit early. I know I kind of threw a lot here, but I just wanted to share that. Yes. Anne, yes.
Yeah. I came in a little bit late, so I didn't hear what you were reading from the beginning. Hmm. But what I did hear, I feel like it just spoke to me so clearly to kind of where I am right now. And I really look forward to seeing where you post it so I can read it again, because I just found it to be very meaningful. And in the part where you talked about, our dreams at night and beginning to do lucid dreaming where we realize it's just a dream, it had not occurred to me before to relate that to our normal so-called waking life being a dream and learning to see the inner workings of that is to be inner. That's lucid living dream.
Lucid living, right?
Yeah, lucid living. I mean, that's such a, that's an amazing parallel. It just feels so true.
It's very profound, because we can start, I worked with dreams quite a bit in my younger years with the symbolism. And what does this mean that I went into this store and I bought that, and how does that relate to what I'm going through in my life? And then at certain points I also realized that this life right now, it also is a dream and has symbols going on too, and you can interpret the symbols in the waking life. It's very interesting, actually. I think maybe we'll see all that when we leave this world and we look back and we'll say, oh yeah, that's how it all was. But it is. I think it's people in the past have understood, I think, better than we do today, the spiritual significance of dreaming and of the possibility of being awake in a way that we are really in harmony with nature, with everything, and to live from that state where we don't feel like we have to have physical comforts and everything perfect on the outside, because we're established at the inner level. In a place of harmony and peace, really, even if we don't have a lot to eat or whatever, but we still have that state. And I think that's the great loss in our modern culture, is we've spent so much energy trying with our technology to be comfortable that we've just lost our connection with our source, and we're never happy. I mean, people are more drugged than ever. It's really a huge tragedy. And so I think getting back to the awareness of our consciousness as primary is critical. So thanks, Anne, so much for saying that. Anything else you wanted to add, or was that was it?
Oh, this is so associative, but it also brought to mind I love when you told us that little story about the empty boat.
Right. Yeah. Row, row, row your empty boat. I didn't hear anything.
I mean, there's so many times where annoying little things happen or somebody is, and I think, And I just, oh, it's just an empty boat.
Empty boat, right. They are. They're all empty. I mean, that's true. We're all blown by winds and currents that we just from who raised us as little kids and where we grew up and what language we speak. And, yeah, that's really true.
What was the story? What was the context of that? There was a little – was it a story about a monk?
The context was – it's an old Taoist – it's in the Chuangzi. If you read Chuangzi, he has these different stories. And so the story is, once upon a time there was a man who was enjoying – laying on the bottom, laying on his back on a boat on a lake, looking up at the sky and the clouds moving by, totally peaceful. And then suddenly something slammed into his boat. Another boat slammed into him. And so he got furious. He was so relaxed and so happy, and somebody didn't even care and was just rammed into him. So he got up. He was ready to yell at the person, and it was an empty boat. It was just came on the wind and ran into him. So he just started laughing at himself, really, and realized that, you know, and that to me is such a great story. When I read that, I was like, that explains everything. It's always empty boats. You know, we take it, you, what you did was an insult to me, or, you know, and we don't see it. It's an empty boat. They're being who they are. We can yell at them if we want, but it's not better to just smile. Essentially, yeah. Okay, let's see. We have two more minutes. Angel, you have your hand up. Good to see you or hear you. You there? Aloha. Maybe not. Somebody has the. Yeah, she. Let's see. Yeah. All right, well, I guess we'll skip that. Okay.
Did it unmute?
Pardon me?
Oh, did it unmute?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and you have your hand raised, and you're unmuted. So do you want to say anything?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to thank you for that brilliant piece that you wrote and shared. Extraordinary, and I look forward to listening to the recording so I can hear it again more meditatively, because there were some distractions in the background at the time. And it's so fascinating, because I find myself singing that song in the kitchen all the time when I'm preparing food and humming that song.
Yeah, that
you brought that up today. Also on this, what I wanted to contribute to this conversation is understanding the distinction between the absolute level of reality and the relative level of reality.
Right.
So in the absolute level of reality, as the pure consciousness, the awareness, we can, excuse me for a moment, this phone is ringing. Okay, so we can witness all that's going on, be aware of it, and be unaffected by it in that state of consciousness. However, on the relative level of reality, we are given three tools, our thoughts, our words, and our actions, with which to co-create with the divine, to be instruments of this absolute reality into this relative reality. And I think it's vitally important to utilize our thoughts, words, and actions to relieve suffering. As you were saying, there's a misconception when people say, oh, it's just a dream and the suffering isn't real and, you know, da, 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 da. I think that's a real spiritual misconception, as you pointed out, and I want to highlight that I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think as long as we are instruments and in these physical forms, it is our duty, our spiritual duty, our swadharma, to alleviate suffering to the best of our ability, as we're all doing in this group, which is why we're all here, birds of a feather flock together, and at the same time to realize that absolute truth, and to understand the distinction between them, which is like the eternal dance between the Shiva and the Shakti, between the Prakriti and the Purusha. That is the eternal dance, is that pure awareness dancing in form, and how we can do that most benevolently, most lovingly, most harmoniously. I believe that is the opportunity of life.
Thank you. Yes, very well said. Thanks, Angel. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's we have both, and they both have equal power. So it's now is saying it's time to come and say our prayer. Thank you, Angel. I appreciate that. Thanks, everyone, so much for joining us. So we'd like to close with our prayer, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And keep rowing your boats. So let's say our let's say it together. Together. Oh, and unmute yourselves, please, if you'd like, so we can get the full divine cacophony here. Okay, here we go. Compassion encircles the earth
for all beings everywhere.
Great. Again.
Compassion encircles the earth
for all beings
everywhere.
And one more time with feeling. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
We love you. Thanks, everyone, so much for your works you're doing. And we look forward to seeing you on the third Thursday. And much love. Go forth and multiply.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much love. Much love.
Thanks.
Bye. Let us know when you post the article.
Yes, I'll let everybody know. Yeah.